to the Book Club, the show that spotlights undiscovered authors and their books. Here's your host, John Austin.
Thanks, Lee, and we begin this morning with the return of Jim H. Ainsworth to talk about his newest novel in the Follow the Rivers series, Go Down Looking. Jim Ainsworth is an extraordinary writer and the award-winning author of 5 novels, 1 memoir, and 4 business books. All of his Follow the Rivers series are based in fact, and his latest, Go Down Looking, continues the autobiographical story of Jake Rivers. Welcome back, Jim.
Oh, thanks for having me back, John.
Well, I'm so happy to have you back. I have to tell the listeners, and I've told Jim, this man is absolutely outstanding writer, and it's difficult to find a genre, as we've talked about with him. His books are kind of historical in nature, but they're all based on his family. But I want to start this morning with just a brief synopsis of the new book, Go Down Looking.
Yeah, this one is I've written 5 about the Rivers family. This is, I guess, the 4th. It follows the sequence of the trilogy. One of them I went back 100 years. But this one takes place in 1961, where Jake is now 16, and he has been left to live out in the panhandle alone, but he's not been able to make it on his own, so he's going back to northeast Texas, and he's having a great deal of difficulty leaving behind and giving up living on his own and going back to face what has been really some nice memories and sweet memories, but also some real tragedy that he left behind in northeast Texas. And he's a little angry because this is his third move or third school and in about 4 years, and he's not happy with himself and he's not happy with his family. And it takes Jake back through that time and his really maturing years and coming of age, and he really comes of age in this book and deals with some of the conflicts.
Okay. You know, the book has one of the best openings that actually I think I've ever read. And it starts with an unnamed character, and this is in present time. Actually, this is in 2011.
Yeah.
Right. And he's looking for an area where Jot'em Down, Texas used to be. Now, Jot'em Down, Texas, I asked you, is that a real name, the name of a real town? And it was, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a little community that is, of course, it's not anything left of it now except a farmer's, one of the largest farmers in the county has got a place there and some grain outlets, and he's got some trucks that had Jot'em Down, Texas, the sign. They keep stealing it because it's based on the old Lum and Abner thing in Pine Ridge, Arkansas.
Okay.
I guess that's what it was named for. But the opening kind of has a story because it wasn't there in the beginning. And one of my mentors, I've always been accused of not putting a hook in a book, and I'm not a big fan of hooks sometimes, but especially if they're so obvious. But that all came about as a result of research. I went out to look at a place, and everything that happened in those first few pages actually actually happened.
Okay, it's a hook. I got to tell you, you read that. That's the first three.
Well, if I finally achieved a hook, I'm happy.
Well, you did. I can tell you because I thought, oh my God, this is wonderful. Okay, now there's a flashback to 1961 where we reconnect with Jake Rivers, and I think the last when you were on the last time we were talking about Rivers Ebb, and Jake Rivers was was obviously the protagonist in that book. And now, as you said, he leaves West Texas and heads back to Delta County in Texas. But that reunion with Jake and his mother and father really isn't too pleasant.
No, he's mad, and he's 16.
Right.
He's somewhat a typical teenager with an attitude, and he's trying to be something he's not, and he is angry that he's going to have to go back to a school, and after he had made a name for himself or a place for himself in the panhandle. And he goes back to the old place where he lived. That's the first place he heads, whether he means to or not. And the old memories come back to him, and some of the things that have happened and the tragedies that the family went through and droughts and floods and death. He runs a bluff and says he's not going to go to school. And, of course, his father knows how to manipulate him pretty well and finally does get him back in school.
Okay. We're going to meet the next character is Green, Griffin Rivers. And before we do that, though, I think I should explain, or we both should explain, I guess you should, that Jake Rivers' character is really you. I mean, obviously not all the things, but you basically are Jake Rivers.
Yeah, I have to admit that. I don't know why I'm hesitant to admit it, but I always tell somebody I'm a little bit Jake and a little bit Rance and a little bit Griffin, but I'm more Jake than anybody else, and so it's autobiographical fiction to a point.
Okay. All right, so let's talk now about Griffin Rivers and the missing fiddle and the music that some people still hear.
Well, Griffin is the favorite character in the previous three books. I mean, even though he's barely in River's Ebb, he writes a letter, and still people talk about that letter. But in the first book, he established himself as a lovable, wise old gentleman who is full of wonderful advice for living, and he's a widow, and he helps Jake through some bad times, and everybody just likes what he has to say, so he's a favorite. So when Jake comes back, of course, he's now, you know, in his 80s, and but the fiddle is a metaphor for a lot of things, but it just symbolizes for Jake some better times. When he sit it on a little three-legged stool and listen to his grandfather play all those years, he tries to recapture those moments and those times by visiting his grandfather. I had to tell you a little side story here, if you don't mind.
Sure, no, absolutely.
When I was when the book was at the publisher's but not printed yet, about 3 months ago, a guy called me on a really rainy day, and he said he was going to buy all my books for his wife's birthday, and he hadn't read them, and his wife hadn't read them, but he did. He bought them, came to the house, really, really heavy rain, and he stepped inside the door because he was wet. And he said, "I have to tell you one thing." He said, "I can remember we lived down the road about a mile, and I can remember hearing your grandfather play that fiddle."
Oh, my God.
It brought chill bucks to me because he had no idea about the book and no idea that those stories would be told, and I didn't know from until he told me that day. So there, when Jake comes back, there are rumors that that the neighbors, even though Griffin has moved from his old little shack out in the country to a town to be closer to doctors and whatever, that people still hear the fiddle playing, and there's no explanation for it, and Jake starts sets out to find out what's going on.
Okay. Well, the guy that you met about all these books, very smart guy, because these books are absolutely outstanding. Now, in the book, actually, Jake meets Wiley Bullard, and we talk about him and Wiley's father is a bootlegger.
Yeah, everybody, I think probably one of the most asked questions is who is the father, because he's kind of the antagonist in the book more than Wiley and his father, a little bit of the antagonist. And he's a composite character, some people that I knew and some situations that I knew about and some that I was directly involved in. And the place that's mentioned in the book, of course, was a bootlegger's house. But Wiley is a bootlegger's son, and in those days, back in the early 60s and, you know, late 50s, they didn't exactly fit in, and sometimes they were wealthier than most of the other people around. So this kid it looks like someone of privilege. He's driving a Thunderbird convertible, and Jake is, of course, poor. His family is poor, and they get together, and that leads him to meet Wiley's sister. But he never quite gets along with the father, and they have several conflicts during the book.
Okay. Yeah, Wiley's sister is a girl named Emma. I really think she's a great character. Now, she's 3 years older than Jake. She's 21.
Yes.
And but there's something that looks like there's going to be something between them in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jake, of course, in those times, boys, at least Jake, didn't consider girls a year older. But, you know, you had to be a year younger and an inch shorter, you know,
right,
and fit the model of your mother and, you know, somebody who might be marriage material before you ask them out for a date. So she was way beyond his reach. But they developed just not intentionally, they developed a relationship over the period of time. And the relationship with her brother worsens, and And eventually Jack gets pulled into some bootlegging activities.
Okay, yeah, I want to talk about that, and actually that was next, because now Wiley takes him to the cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was common, I say it's common, the rumors were common that around this part of the country there's a lot of bootleggers, and some of them were known to have kept some of their stashes, their best stashes, in cemeteries, in vaults. And they had fake openings for the graves, and they'd go down and get their hooch. Wiley shows Jake where one is one night, and that leads to a confrontation with his dad. It escalates to violence, and the old cemetery in the that's mentioned in the book is an actual cemetery, and I described it just about as well as I could from the way it looks.
Wow. Okay. Now, Wiley actually takes Jake on a car trip to Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. They are actually now all of a sudden, or Wiley has been involved with the bootlegging, but they have some hooch with them, and suddenly on the way back, they're pulled over and arrested by Officer Redstone.
Yeah, Jake falls. He's out driving in the ice, and he kind of showing off because he knows how to drive in bad weather. He's been in the panhandle and he thinks he has a great, you know, aptitude with cars on and bad weather conditions, especially ice. So he's out showing off, runs across Wiley and helps him out of the situation. And Wiley kept putting money in Jake's hands, and you know, it's more money than Jake's made in a year. And Jake gets talked into going to what we used to call a run to the Red, because we're close to the Red River here. And you'd go across the Red River in Oklahoma where you could buy hooch. And there was a bootlegger there that was a supplier for a lot of the bootleggers in northeast Texas. And when they're coming back, and there is a deputy sheriff, they stop on the square because Wiley's been drinking, and he gets a little sick, gets outside and throws up, and the deputy sheriff shines a light on him, and they wind up in jail.
Okay. And at that point now, we're going to introduce two new characters. They're not new because they've been through all of these books, and they're very important characters. But let's talk about Gray Boy and Bob Lee, who actually come to Jake's rescue.
Yeah, Gray Boy is in the Marines and is supposed to be 1,000 miles away, and Bob Lee is a cousin that Jake has been, he's been Jake's mentor, and he looked after Jake when he was in the panhandle. Neither one of them are supposed to be there, and Jake is about to give up. Wiley's father comes to get him out of jail, and Jake doesn't want his father called, but he's about to give up and ask the sheriff, please call my father to let me out of here, get me out of here. He didn't want to tell him, but when he hears sheriff did call the house and the father wasn't there for reasons that may or may not want to talk about, but Gray Boy comes in. He has hitched a ride with Bob Lee from the panhandle, and they walk in and just in time to rescue Jake. And he's not happy with Jake, although Jake's been in the same jail cell that Gray Boy was in a few years earlier.
Okay. And Gray Boy is Jake's brother, older brother.
Yes. Right.
Okay. I don't know whether you wanted to talk about Papa Griff at this time and the reason that they are. I guess we almost have to because.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't mind that. Yeah.
Okay. So all of in this book, Papa Griff dies. And
yeah.
Okay.
And that night, I mean, he's the reason why that Jake's dad is not at home when they call is because they've been called to Papa Griff's place, and Papa Griff has died on his birthday. And it was 82nd birthday. And Jake, they tell Jake when they go back to the cemetery to pick up his pickup where he's left it. And they tell him at that time, he said, well, I'm going to his house. And they go to his house. And I think that's one of my favorite scenes in the book. It was poignant when they go back and the old man's gone, but his things are still there. And of course, his aura is around the room. And they go through some tough times. And Bob Lee is there. Of course, it's not Bob Lee's grandfather, but he's a maternal cousin. But the brothers, you know, connect, and Jake finds out why Gray Boy is home, and he's having marital trouble and had to come home and kind of help that, try to correct that, get that corrected. And And that's kind of where it goes.
Okay, and there's two new characters that do come in here. A fellow named Felton Hicks, and actually the guy who owns the funeral parlor, Mark Potter. And it turns out that now, even though Papa Griffith supposedly bought insurance, now they're saying he has no insurance.
Yeah, after Griff is buried, will they learn that the insurance policy that they thought they had didn't exist, and that he had asked for his money back, that Griffin had swapped the his fiddle for the insurance policy, and then he wanted the fiddle back. But nobody knows where the fiddle is. So there's a little conflict there between the undertaker, the funeral homeowner, and the mortician. And Skidder Hicks is based on a fellow I knew once who used to really just kind of skitter around town, and he sold burial premiums, burial policies, and he could collect every week from people. And it was amazing to me that he would go around and collect $1.30 from somebody for their weekly premium on their, you know, $1,000 insurance policy.
Right. Okay.
Burial policy, really.
Okay. We're talking to Jim H. Ainsworth about his terrific new novel, Go Down Looking. Now, there's a number of altercations. Jake has a penchant. He's suddenly in fights through this book that, I mean, he's in a fight with Old Man Bullard. And then he likes this girl. I don't know whether he likes it, but there's this the girl that actually is in his school, Cynthia. But her boyfriend is older and plays football for I've forgotten who.
A&M, yeah.
Yeah, and Texas A&M. Okay. And then he ends up with an altercation it wasn't with the boyfriend. It was one of the boyfriend's friends.
Yes. The boyfriend's friend just kind of takes Jake out with a sucker punch, and he didn't know it was coming, was kind of expecting the boyfriend to come at him, and of course that would have been terrible for Jake, too, because he wasn't very big, and the boyfriend was huge. But he had an equally huge team player, and who was a follower of the boyfriend. He was a big leader, and it just cleans Jake's clock and knocks him unconscious, and sends him kind of on a spiral. He had already been. He's about to get out of his make friends, and he was about to come out of it, and this took him back a little bit.
Okay, there's a part here on graduation night where there is a whole lot of excitement.
Yeah, on graduation night, of course, that's already happened, but he's still got a little thing for Cynthia, but he knows that's kind of over, and now that the boyfriend's back. And so he goes to the girl he realizes can rely on, and he goes to pick her up, and then later on when he takes her back home, has a little confrontation with her father. who happens to be drunk. He just can't seem to win, and then he winds up in the cemetery and has a huge confrontation with Bullard and the bootlegger, and he winds up at home pretty much beside himself and in deep trouble. And when he gets there, well, Bullard is waiting for him.
Okay. Now there's some other characters in here. The first one is we need to talk about is Ridge.
Yeah. Ridge is Gray Boy's son, and he's named after Jake. Jake's middle name is Ridge, and he is a focus of the divorce proceedings, of course, between Gray Boy and his wife. And Gray Boy has not been able to see him. And when he go out to the Panhandles to see him, which is 500 miles away, when he gets out of the service, he goes out there to see him, and his wife hides him every time. So they sneak out there, and not knowing that they're coming, and trying to catch him there, because Bob Lee is telling them, hey, she's here, and the boy's here, come. And so they came, and he took Jake with him, and Jake basically steals the little boy.
Okay. You know, there's some just wonderful stories in here, and I told Jim, I said, man, you must have lived quite a life. But I want to go into two things here that are in the book that don't have a whole lot to do with the plot. But let's talk about Ghost, because actually the Ghost does. I mean, it continues through the...
Yeah, Ghost, you're talking about Ghost the horse.
Horse, you know, right? Right.
Yeah, I just can't seem to write a book without a horse in it. They just sneak in there. Sometimes I think, well, there's not one in that book, but there always is. And this one is based on a true horse story and a true horse. My father had one just like this, and And actually, his name was Snow, and I don't know why I changed it to Ghost, but he was very white and very pale, almost an albino horse. And he seemed to take on qualities at a point in time when Jake's dad dies. He seems to take on, for Jake at least, the qualities of his father, and that horse plays a pivotal role in the climax of the book.
Right. Okay. Now there's another part that actually is you said is true, and there's a great story about this. I guess after you wrote the book, but this is the rodeo, and the horse that Jake draws, Eagle's Nest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was the easiest scene in the book to write, and I think it's one of my favorite scenes because I could remember it. And once I started recollecting it, I had to write it 3 or 4 times, but the recollections would come back to me. And Jake has always been a wannabe cowboy, and his only route, it seems, he can't afford. He wants to rope, but he doesn't have the money to buy a rope horse or buy ropes or a trailer to haul a horse in. But he decides to do this cheapest thing. He borrows a bareback rigging and decides he's going to enter some bareback competitions. And this is about his third competition. Entry fee is a week's pay for him, and he gets a horse called Eagle's Nest, and this old cowboy comes up and says, you want to know what that horse is going to do? And Jake had a rule about that. He didn't really want to know what that is because he figured it would plant bad things in his mind. But the guy told him anyway. So he'll go over to the corner of the arena, take two little soft bucks over there, and then he'll go over to that corner of the arena. And Jake said, well, what'll happen then? And the old cowboy says, and you'll find out why they call him Eagle's Nest. And he did.
He did, right. Okay. You know, I'm going to rush through some of this because I want to have a little bit of time at the end. But this is where things really kind of get tough in the book, because you got Gray Boys needs some money, and he has a proposition to Jake, and Jake actually gets involved in the bootlegging to an extent.
Yeah, Gray is looking for money to hire a lawyer and a private detective to try to get him back with his son, and he's broke, and he needs Jake's help because Jake is a delivery boy and a soda jerk for a grocery store. I mean, for a drugstore, and so he's out, you know, delivering to various people, and he has a perfect cover to deliver alcohol, and for the bootlegger. The only problem is it's going to be back with his old nemesis, Bullard. And so it creates a problem for Jake to help out his brother, violating the law, and working with his old nemesis. But somehow or other, I hope I made it credible that he wound up doing it anyway.
Oh, you did. Oh, you did. Yeah, okay. I'm going to end the plot here, but I have to say there's a twist in here with Emma that I never saw coming. And, I mean, there's all kinds of things. There's a confrontation with Felton, what you call Skidder Hicks, and is back in town with Gray and Jake. This part of the book gets very exciting. There, as the book draws to a close, you've got so many more twists, turns, smiles, and actually a lot of tears as the book carries you forward to a shattering incident that basically is the focal point of the book. Tell us how they can buy the books.
Yeah, they can buy the books. Of course, they're now released. They were released last Tuesday, June the 12th, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and, you know, most of the major online websites. Or you can buy them at www.jimainsworth.com. And that's the, you know, go to my site and I'll send an autographed copy. And I have basically a two-for-one deal going right now. So if you buy Go Down Looking, I send you another book free.
Oh, terrific. Yeah. Give us the website again.
www.jimainsworth.com.
Okay.
Or you can Google my name and it'll come up.
Okay. You know, we're basically totally out of time, but I have to say, so you are absolutely an extraordinary writer, and I know that the genesis of this River series was to tell the story of your family. Mm-hmm. And there's excitement. There's just about everything in this book. And next for you, is this the end of the Rivers series?
I think it is. You read the kind of the quote, I didn't call it an epilogue, but you read the end of this, and I think it kind of ended Jake's story. I want to create, because the people I'd write about now would be still alive, all of them. Still, a lot of them are alive in this book. Right. It's harder to write those stories for me,
right.
For some people. And so I want to create another character based on some experiences that I've had. It's not that I've lived all that unusual life. Almost all of us have got great stories if you just look around for them. And I have had I've been very fortunate to have some unusual experiences, but everybody has, I guess. But the stories I want to tell.
Okay. There's a line in your book, which isn't yours, I know, but it's, you're only old when regrets replace your dreams.
Yeah, I think that's a John Barrymore quote, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, Jim, we're so happy to have you back. And we have been talking to Jim H. Ainsworth about his newest novel in the Rivers series, Go Down Looking. Now stay tuned for the second half of our program right after these messages.